Welcome to the Inside Silverstone podcast, a business-focused podcast covering all things tech, engineering and innovation. Hosted by me, Chris Broom, a huge tech, motorsport and gaming fan, and also the owner of Longhurst, a firm of lifestyle financial planners and independent financial advisors located in Silverstone, Northamptonshire. This is a series of unscripted and unpolished conversations with leading business owners, thought leaders and high-tech talent where we discuss their experiences within the Silverstone business and motorsport region. We will also be asking them to share their knowledge, insight and their thoughts on the future just for you. If you're looking to learn more about the Silverstone High Growth Region and commercially connect with like-minded peers, you've definitely come to the right place. Welcome to Inside Silverstone. Welcome to the next edition of Inside Silverstone. My name is Chris Broom and I am your host. Today I am delighted to welcome to the show, finally welcome to the show, Andrew Grant, who is CEO of Aylesbury Vale District Council. Andrew, welcome to the show.
Thank you, Chris. Nice to be here at last.
At last.
Because I have the Scarlet Pimpernel.
you're not as bad as some of the other board members, but it's fine. I am a tenacious young man. Young-ish man. I will continue to persevere.
You're shorter than me, isn't he?
So. Indeed. Very rarely do I meet a chap who's bigger than taller than me, and you indeed are, with a very firm handshake as well, may I say.
Everyone gets it.
Very, very impressive. Right, Andrew, as is very customary, you are now episode 30 of the podcast, or 31.
Near my age.
There we are, indeed. very customary of us. We like to run through quick education and career snapshot, just so our wonderful listeners can understand why we've asked you to come on the show. So is it okay if I just quickly run through that? Education-wise, University College of North Wales, where you did an initial degree in forestry.
Yes, quite odd to hear that.
I was interested. So why forestry? That must have been very interesting.
It was fascinating. Mm. It wasn't something you could walk into a job, though, because at the time there were a lot of us, actually quite towny type students who were, you know, it was a bit of a romantic notion to get up into the trees. Mm. But forestry is quite a hard grafting type of topic.
I mean, it
was about production of timber and so on. Mm-hmm. I quite like the kind of environment, what now would be kind of working in environmental sciences, you know, preserving trees, National Trust. Mm. But a lot of students that were probably not that, you know, suited to the outdoor life. Mm. So a lot of us became, accountants and local government officers. But at the time, I thought it was quite... My granddad had been a forester. Right. Not that I'd known him, because he died before I was very old. And his, you know, uncles. And I had a romantic notion. It was that, or Celtic studies. I wanted to be a Celtic warrior. I had ideas of being Cuchulainn, the chieftain.
Okay.
In my probably reading too much.
Did you still have that sort of vision for your future when you grow up? What do you want to be?
I project that in all my leadership.
Bit
warrior type.
I'm sensing that sitting opposite you right now.
That's hence the handshake.
Oh my god!
The job I didn't, you know.
Honestly, get your axe
out.
Get
you in my Game of Thrones amulet. But yes, forestry was actually it's a really good grounding of, you know, there's economics, there's how do you make money out of trees, there's obviously the biology of trees, and North Wales is an amazing place to be in.
Sure.
Not many girls and not many rock bands to listen to, because Bangor's a long way from anywhere.
Yeah.
So if you don't like many friends, then go to Bangor. But I had solid friends there,
good. And then once you'd finished that degree, you then also then followed up with a master's in housing, which you did at the University of West of England.
Yeah, well, I came back from forestry degree, didn't get a job in forestry, as I mentioned, not many of us did. Wasn't really a very well-paid job, sitting in the middle of a forest with rain dripping down your back of your neck. I like people too much, I realised.
Yeah.
So came back to home, and anyway, I rowed with a guy. Actually, I was big into rowing, being a tall chap.
Yeah.
And I rowed in North Wales, but also back in London, where I grew up, at Kingston-upon-Thames, and I met a guy that worked in the housing department in Londonwell Croydon.
Mm-hmm.
And I just pumped some, you know, evening meals off him because I was poor, and just said, have you got a job? He went, oh, not. Do I have to get you a job as well as buy you a meal? And then fell into local government. I had no clue about it. Mm. And then one thing led to another, and I went into the homeless team there.
Okay.
And then one thing led to another, and I met someone, a lady, and she was studying at University of West of England, mm-hmm. Bristol Poly as it was called, and she was doing housing. I thought, I like her, I'll do housing. It's weird, isn't it? It wasn't like I discovered it for the, you know, and I thought, well, this is a career I could do. It's people-based. Mm. I was working in the housing department in Croydon, dealing with some very, you know, quite difficult people in difficult circumstances.
Yes, and, I bet, yeah.
I thought this is a career you could make your name at. So I went and did a degree there and then a master's and then fell into local government.
Which then sort of evolved career-wise from sort of 97 to 06, where you became Deputy Chief Executive of the Cotswold District Council.
That's right.
Which must have been a sort of wonderful, beautiful part of the world.
Beautiful. On the surface, yes. I mean, amazing environmental, you know, environment to be in. Quite a few, I mean, I came in as Director of Community Services, so much wider than housing. So, you know, managing the museum, fantastic Carillion Museum there, waste management, a whole range of community services, which we can come on to. But beneath the surface, like most rural areas, there are, you know, quite difficult circumstances for people that didn't have access to, you know, a lot of money. And rural poverty is a not often talked about topic.
No, that's not.
You know, literally trying to get the first couple of miles to town to work can be the difficult first, you know, the most difficult 2 miles that you'll ever get. Mm-hmm. So in cities, you know, obviously we all know about the difficulties of people at the margins, and that's a worry anyway. But in rural areas, it's often, and not, we mustn't underestimate that for the Aylesbury Vale. You know, deep pockets of deprivation in our bigger towns, but also isolated older people in the rural areas.
Yes,
so that
that
was a flavour of Cotswold as well. Very large physical area, but you know, to live your life in Cotswold isn't always as pleasant as it might be if it's your third house and your other two are in Highgate in London. You know.
Yeah, yeah, very wise. And then after your sort of nine-year sort of stint at the Cotswold District Council, you then in 06 to present day basically became Chief Exec, CEO of Aylesbury Vale District Council.
Yes, that's right.
And so the next question I'd normally ask if I was chatting to a sort of traditional business owner would be, talk to us and introduce your business to us. And for those that don't know what you do, what do you do? And so I'm going to ask the same question. So for those that aren't familiar with necessarily Aylesbury Vale District Council, but ultimately how a district council works and operates as an entity, and your role therein, you have the floor. Yeah, explain, talk to us.
Well, thanks, Chris. I mean, I like your intro, you know, asking business owners to explain what's the purpose of the business, what do they do. Local government might seem quite stuffy and stale, but obviously it has a lot of resources going into it because you're paying your council tax and your national taxes to us to make your life better.
We are indeed.
And you're obviously vocal every time there's an election. The point is, councils aren't businesses technically, but they need to be businesslike. They have a lot of resources, a lot of moving parts, collecting you know, waste from, you know, rubbish from the front door to every house. I mean, there's 75,000 households, something like 200,000 population, very rapidly growing area, 360 square miles.
So where's Aylesbury Vale, sort of well, northeast, southwest, sort
we're
of
on the, we're on the edges of it here, on the edges of Northamptonshire, but it goes right down to nearly Prince's Risborough in the south, to Wendover in the south, so on the edge of the Chilterns.
Yeah.
It's the second largest district in the country. District councils, where they sit with a county council. The county council, like Buckinghamshire, is 600,000 population. So we're over half the physical land mass of Buckinghamshire. 60% of it. Half the track in Silverstone is in Aylesbury Vale.
Yes.
The fastest corners, as I often bore my South Northampton friends with. So we work very closely with South Northamptonshire about the planning of Silverstone and the MEPC site, and the track is really important to us, as well as Silverstone Village is in Northamptonshire, but Silverstone track is, half of which is in Buckinghamshire.
Interesting.
So a very large physical area. So say it's a business because we have something like 450 staff. When I joined, we had a sort of turnover of 90 million. With the government cuts and austerity, we've had about 60% of our government grant reduced.
Wow.
So, but we've saved something like 18, 20 million out of our operational budget, but got better because we've adopted, like businesses, ways of becoming more efficient, ways of trying to maximize customer value. Mm. And you think, what's the council doing? Well, it's collecting your bins. It's very hard to do that winter and summer from every household with very few mistakes, any operation, whether you're a business or not. Trying to do something high volume, high repetition successfully is a challenge for all business leaders. But the most important thing is we're a democratically elected body. So we're not a business as such, but we have to be a business-like. So every so many years, you elect your local councillors who then form a council, and they have to think of things like, you know, where's government policy going? How do we keep core services? So we don't do the roads, county does that, but we house the homeless, we pick your bins up, we look after economic development. We'll come onto that with Silverstone Technology Cluster. We plan the housing, which is where the growth comes in. We make sure that your air quality management, the food you eat in the restaurants is safe. Mm-hmm. Really things that if we weren't there, you'd soon notice within about 6 hours.
Yeah.
But we're not here to we're here to make things better for you without you noticing us. But of course, we do ask for government to pay us some grant, although that's all going by 2020, and council tax. But council tax, people get quite upset. Most of it goes to the county council, 90%. Mm-hmm. We get 10% of whatever you pay a year to whomever you pay it to. Mm-hmm. But for that, in our case, £145 of that, you know, £1,000 comes to us. And that we do something like 250 services for that, which most of which you wouldn't know that you exist.
Yeah.
And we have to cope with those cuts, but less than half, almost between a third and a half of our costs are council tax. The rest of it has to become from income generation and efficiency savings. And local government is facing where, you know, apparently austerity is over.
Yeah.
And I know on podcasts you can't see my face, not keeping straight. Austerity isn't over. Mm. The public sector, local government's going to take another £3 billion cut over the next 5 years in order to effectively keep the public sector afloat, because most of it goes to the NHS, quite rightly,
yes,
perhaps you could say. But the NHS can't function unless the county council and district council can do those services that feed into, you know, when people go into hospital, they have to come out of hospital. Mm-hmm. Hopefully they're prevented from going in the first place.
Yes.
But so all those services that keep people well, and when they are unwell and need to come home to a house that's, you know, has someone to come and care for you if you've been ill, or services that surround the community, those need funding as well. It's not enough to do the NHS once you're in hospital. That's not good enough. Mm. So really the big debate that's needed is how the whole system works. It's not good enough just to pay the NHS what it needs. Mm. And they're getting NHS with another £30 billion over the next 5 years. And a lot of your taxation goes there. Mm. But it's the whole system that's needed. And the district councils play its part in keeping the whole system going.
And Howard, so you say that obviously part of the, you know, your annual funding comes from sort of grants and, you know, government, et cetera, and our taxes. But how do you raise the rest of the money?
Well, we take what we get and try and become even more efficient with it. So you're going to be talking hopefully later about our crusade on digital.
Let's talk about it now.
The other thing is that where services can be, we pioneered ways of creating value propositions for customers. So, and lottery is one of them we'll come on to, is where commercialization is the exchange of value for reward. I mean, it's not enough to say, I'm taxing you for that and you don't see why you're paying. Mm-hmm. Most people think they're paying too much already. Although when I say, well, how much do you think it costs to pick your bin up every week? And how much would you pay if we didn't exist? And most people think, well, and today, Chris, you look lovely in your gingham shirt and your nice chinos. If you had to take all your waste to a local dump before you came here in your nice clothes, you probably think, actually, it's probably worth about 20 quid a week.
Yeah.
If you price point that.
Sure.
Actually, it's 60 pence a week.
Wow.
And there's no rubbish, and we pick it up. Now, obviously, we're scaling that over, 75,000 households, 200,000 population. But if we could create value propositions that say, well, what's it worth to you if we added something that you don't absolutely need but you'd like because you trust us to provide it? Mm-hmm. So our green waste service, which we don't have to take, grass cuttings away from your front door, but a lot of people like it. We introduced that in 3 or 4 years ago, And some councils just give it to you within the council tax, but then, you know, that costs us to provide you an extra bin and pick it up. That, within sort of 3 months, we had 17,000 people signed up, because some people had two bins. Mm-hmm. Had I known how many people wanted it, and it's only £34 a year, I'd have charged £90 a year, because mm-hmm. people think, well, that's still cheap at twice the price.
Sure.
So we're creating value propositions that people think. So we've tried out subscription services for house cleaning. We've incubated businesses and tried to. And one of the failures that I will admit to is that we couldn't scale it as a business. We didn't have the, perhaps the, sometimes the skill set to know that we had a 5 or 10 people paying us 3 times the annual council tax per month for house cleaning, mm-hmm. because they trusted us to provide it, because they thought, well, it's a sort of extended council service. Mm-hmm. They could get it from the private sector. And we would bid on quality and price like anybody. We're not robbing the private sector of work that they're owed, mm-hmm. because everyone has to pitch for that. Mm-hmm. And we couldn't scale it beyond those 10 to 15 people, because we'd need to then think, how many more people do we need to go to, you know, it's not like waste crews where we can go to a house every day, mm-hmm. buy a kind of waste rounds, and there's a lot of infrastructure required. But I think we'll come back to subscription services as a way to scale value add services to the core business. Mm. In order, what we're trying to do is, anything we make on their services, we don't make a profit because we can't, mm-hmm. we'll go to those key services that you can't charge for. I can't charge you if you were homeless for being homeless, for the privilege, but I have to pay for staff of the right quality to see you, and quite rightly. Mm-hmm. You want to see someone that knows what they're talking about, but they have to be paid, you know, so many tens of thousands a year for turning up. Mm-hmm. They don't do it, you know, they're not the Boy Scouts, they don't do it for free. Mm. But those services you can't and shouldn't charge for, but they need still paying for. So anything I make in areas that I can expand, mm-hmm. like a social enterprise, I can bring forward to the point of consumption of people that can't pay. So that's the business model I'm trying to create. And I've spluttered, and, you know, things work, and they, because often people don't expect this, so they don't know how to buy it. Mm-hmm. And they think, why are you charging me for that? I should have it in my council tax. But when I tell you the council tax is 145 quid a year, I don't think I can do much with that from you. That's about 3 hours. Well, it's about 15 minutes of my time. But it's about 3 hours flying time. And with planning applications, we've turned those from costing us £1 million a year to getting headroom of £1 million a year to put into new services, because we shrink the amount of effort it takes to give you a planning permission, mm-hmm. using digital means, and people much more focused. People pay for a planning application, £120, you know, and you think, well, you're paying for it, so you should get a good service, and so you should. But that's about 3 hours flying time for us. If we can't get the work done in 3 hours, then I'm paying you the permission you're getting.
Yeah,
or at least all the taxpayers are paying for you to get
the permission. It's cross-subsidising,
So we've thought about how to be more business-like. We're not a business, mm-hmm. we're democratic elected, and quite rightly. But how to make the techniques that the private sector is using apply to business processes, which are the same. Getting mm-hmm. to yes between, you know, can I have, and here it is in a package, mm-hmm. is the same whether you're a business or a council. Whether it's, you know, I'd like to have, or would you give me permission for, is a process. And we, and a lot of local government is adopting lean processes to shrink the bit that is the boring bit.
Yeah, yeah.
Improve the means by which you can say, can I have, maybe digital, you know, without forms that have to be reworked. And hopefully charge for things that people think they're getting value for, their value adds. Mm-hmm. Do you want fries with that? Mm-hmm. Yes, that's another quid. And that helps us pay for the costs of services that can't be charged for.
And how are you embracing, and how is the District Council embracing technology to help with this?
Well, we were an early adopter, because I think the industry, I mean, you know, working with some amazing colleagues in the, come on to the Silverton Technology Cluster, I mean, the technology bit, but it's all people that want to do better things for people out there. Mm. So it's technology, but technology in and of itself is no point. It's what do you want to do with it? How does it make Chris's life better, or the customer's life better, or industry better? We saw very early on that this was a game changer. Not least, you can do a lot of the heavy lifting with digital. If you think of the scale of 200,000 population, lots of customers, lots of moving parts in what we do. You can't you know, one day we may be able to drone the waste collection.
Yeah, yeah.
But there are systems in Europe where you put it in a, you know, in a chute in a community in Holland, and it's sucked out at the end of the, you know, the waste crews turn up to a point where the community, you know, it's gone underground.
Yeah, yeah.
And they don't have to wait to your to every house. They do it from a
one point.
So digital helps you do the heavy lifting, a lot of processes, it, and often, and also we saw the customers, as we see them, we don't see them residents, customers of all services, where they, people have to buy our services or deal with the council, as well as going to Sainsbury's and phoning up Sky and phoning up Vodafone, and we have to sit with the same customer-facing service offer as all of our the world that you live in, whether it's catching the bus or so. Increasingly, the world is turning to shrink wrapping the kind of data to your phone or to your device or to your chip in your, in your on your ring. And as you mentioned, though, people to miniaturize that to make our services fit your day, not you fit our day. Like, can you, Chris? Can you turn up at four when we're open? You'll have to queue. Do you mind? You know, you'll have to, someone else will have to take the kids to school. No, the idea is, how does it make you engage with us better? So digital helps us, you know, if we can provide information over the digital to on a My Account basis, as you would with Amazon, a lot of it's self-serve there. You can set things up. You don't need to talk to us. And we increasingly used through our Connected Knowledge Program, connecting us to the data about people so we can predict and provide instead of catching up with you. We can predict where the demands will be in future. But we were early adopters, for instance, we were the first local authority public sector in the world to have a skill in the Amazon Alexa app range for commanding, voice commanding Amazon Alexa to give you, say, special collections for waste and collection of digital sharps, diabetic sharp collection.
Okay.
And now we, and so we were, because we worked, we were the first council in the country to use Amazon Web Services as a cloud provider in 2013. Still a lot of local authorities still with servers in the basement and people fiddling it with magic screwdrivers.
Right.
So we were early adopter with cloud because that allows you to get out from the desk and the premises and squirt business, you know, your business out to the cloud to download to individuals on a train or... and allows our staff to get out from the office and save costs. So we used Alexa because we used Amazon Web Services was our provider. Amazon were rolling out a device called Alexa, which we all marvel with, you know, a few years ago. And so we worked with their programmers to provide a skill which you can download that is connected to your My Account that says, you know, I'm Chris, ask my council, can you collect my bin from my front door because I've broken my leg. Now, and the most, and people didn't want that actually. People didn't want that. They liked the fact we were using Alexa and Amazon were very cool about, you know, I've spoken on Amazon, you know, platforms to say, you know, this is harnessing the power of, you know, the world, well, actually it was Germany and America and England were the first rollout, the power of voice recognition. And we were just playing around with, I wonder if people would like to call down council services using it, not just, can you play my rainy day list or order me some more, you know,
whatever,
bananas. And we roadshowed this and and people thought it was great we were using something that a lot of other modern people were using. But they said, well, we don't want those things. What we want, the most asked for thing was, what's my bin day?
Yes, true.
Quite boring.
Yeah, but so simple.
But then, you know, you're meant to have that in your head, you know, it's Wednesday, no?
Yeah, yeah.
But you look at your neighbour, don't you? Say,
well, it's also not just what day it is, but what bin is it? So, you know, so with ours, it's like, is it the black bin or the blue or green bin? And so you do look at your neighbours as you're driving up.
Yeah.
But you are right, to simplify life.
So we've now, that's our most asked for app. And so now you can say, you know, Alexa, you know, ask my council, which is the, actually what the American, we had it tested by 147 non-English native speaking Amazon staff in America, excuse me. And they wanted it, the routine to be longer because it wasn't explaining enough or shorter. In the end, we couldn't say, ask my council, because in American, it's, Alexa thinks it means cancel.
Ah, because of the accent.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So you have to say, ask my local authority, which is very boring. But anyway, ask my bin day. It's Wednesday, Chris, you know. And you can ask.
And that works today.
It works today.
Yeah, yeah.
It can read from the website. Because, to be honest, it's liberated this for people that are partially sighted.
Sure.
We've had people that are profoundly deaf using our web chat channel, which is another channel that we put AI on,
yeah.
Where with Digital Genius, which is a company whose other main, we're the only public sector customer of theirs in the world. Their other main customer of theirs is KLM Airlines. So if you're late for your flight or you're passing duty free, it says, hi, Chris, there's some, I don't know what your favorite tipple is. You know, Evian water, I'm sure. there's a deal on this as you're racing to get your plane seat, or they've rerouted you and it gives you real-time information to say, look, Chris, your flight's delayed, don't hurry. So we've used that in our customer call center on our web chat channel to automate the sort of questions that have often been asked before. But the agent maybe doesn't know that, or at least has to think of it again and ask the same question 100 times. So we, on the web chat channel, it'll say, you know, what time is my, what time you the pool will open?
Mm-hmm.
And because it's been asked before, it will go away and do all the heavy lifting of how many times that's been asked and the sort of, oh, is it Wednesday? And what about, can I bring my kids? All these and questions. And it'll come back to the agent with a degree of likelihood that this is the right answer because this has been the answer before.
Mm-hmm.
The agent can override it and say, oh, no, actually, we've got bank holiday and this is the answer and actually tap it out. But increasingly, the staff have said, actually, it's about 90% accurate.
Mm-hmm.
So we can't add to it. But if you did add to it, then it's learned the addition for the next time.
Yeah, yeah.
So now we've been able to not have the sort of all the heavy lifting of the information that's been said before to be said on web chat.
Mm.
That can, and the customer knows it's automated, but doesn't mind because they just, look, I've got 5 minutes. Is the pool open or not?
Mm.
They don't care that a human's not telling them.
Mm-hmm.
But we can then take the time that we would have taken on that to pass to more complex issues and put more empathy and time into being more human.
Yes, yes.
So to me, AI is human shaped. It's not taking our jobs. It means the jobs can be better executed.
Yeah, yeah.
We have reduced the number of people in the call center. I'm not lying. But then either we can use those people somewhere else in the building or we can not have those people in the first place. Maximize customer fulfillment and reduce the burden on your council tax. So I think digital is the passport to better human services when resources are scarce and you want the human to go into the places that you're paying for that kind of empathy and trust and
connection.
You're not going to get a robot saying, oh, sorry, you're homeless and, you know, we can't help. That isn't the point of the council.
Yeah.
It's, and no, nor would any private sector do that. They would automate the things that are sort of cost to the company.
Yeah, yeah.
And they'd maximize the bit that increasing their value proposition, the people interface. So people buy from people.
Sure.
But often if you're on the run and, you know, you're on the train and you're late, you just need the information. You don't need to wait for someone to get back to you because they put you on hold.
Yeah, yeah. This neatly leads on from a sort of technology conversation to the Silverstone Technology Cluster. So we're sat in Silverstone Park in the Innovation Centre today. You know, Aylesbury Valley District Council are a founding member and a board member of the Silverstone Technology Cluster.
Could you pause? I'm going to cough. I don't want that on there.
It's okay.
Right. Back with you.
So Aylesbury Vale District Council are a founding member of and a board member of the Silverstone Technology Cluster.
Yeah.
So my first question is sort of why? Why did you sort of join the STC and launch it?
Well, when Ros proposed the STC coming out of the major study into what sort of cluster we're in, which she'd commissioned, we were very excited to join.
Mm.
I mean, we've always been pro investment. I mean, the council itself has put something like £120 million investment into Aylesbury Town Centre in buildings that we've built for Waitrose, Travelodge, a theatre, university building, and we just launched just some restaurants and housing in the town centre. So we're very pro investment, and so investment of our time in this area, which, as I said before, with South Northants and Northamptonshire, we've always been here for the circuit, here for MEPC when they acquired the land out in this outside the pay line. Mm-hmm. Because if Silverson doesn't succeed, then we all are worse off. Mm-hmm. So when the proposition came of joining the cluster, and that the study had shown a very strong potential in an hour's drive time to bring together businesses that were more often diverse, but they're all common. They were bound by the common pursuit of, you know, better lives for their businesses, but using technology as a platform, mm-hmm. and not just F1 technology, but things mm-hmm. that cross-fertilize, be it in biomedics or, measuring high-performance materials, 3D printing, sure. All those things were sort of coagulating around common themes, and hence the SIGs that we've got now, the special interest groups. So we thought, we were very open with it, and I know my colleagues at South Northants were in. We'd like to take a seat on the board to kind of help contribute, we were learning from the technology partners and the SMEs in particular, Ross. And we were trying to bring our heft from the planning point of view, because obviously we have to plan how the area grows in its economic, its employment land, its housing land over the next 30 years. That's the process of council doing their local plans, which we're just finishing the next iteration of, called the Vale of Aylesbury local plan. So clearly how you interlock where people live, how the employment sites will get developed, how the permissions are given, with who's going to be in those units. Mm. It's not enough to build build the shell. You've got to build the people. Mm. So we thought, we'll come into this. We'll learn as we go along. I didn't know Rob and Kieran, and I knew Roz from working with her from MEPC. Mm. So it was a new venture.
Yeah.
So we liked that.
And how's it gone so far, do you think?
It's gone amazingly well. I mean, Pim's done a great job, as has Roz and all the board. I think to grow it from, a few in the cluster to the 90 that it's got now, and thinking again how we push on. Mm. We've got our Silverson Technology Cluster annual event. The first one was very good. Mm. We had interest. I mean, the interest is growing and growing, and it's trying how you capture that. And the board is considering now how we mature the offer to people of, early adopters. Have a look. Is it worth us paying, whatever the subscription is as a small business? The SIGs have grown. Mm. We've taken advice from the Cambridge Wireless sister cluster. Mm. We're slightly different, but there's some common themes. And now it's trying to embed, stronger underpinnings to it. Mm. So I think it's grown. It's done much better than I think anyone hoped.
Yeah, yeah.
And that's good. Mm. We're bringing in some colleagues in the cluster that perhaps we'd not thought of the connections. Mm. And I think it's put Silverstone on the map, and we're saying government's interest in how, and this is really good timing, how this plays in to a post Brexit world. Mm. Today is the withdrawal agreement day, I don't know.
Yes.
Into the world after all this debate that's going to carry on.
Yeah, yeah.
And more importantly, if the Oxford and Cambridge arc is a thing, and obviously we're at the centre of it, we're at the epicenter of it in Aylesbury Vale and Silverstone. How does the cluster help government really foster something that will be globally significant between the two universities? Actually, it's what happens in the white space. It's not the universities itself, because, they're not on the cluster. You don't hear too much from them.
Sure.
It's all the towns and cities and areas and people coming together to make the area between a really rich place, not just the bit that you speed past when you go between Oxford and Cambridge.
Sure.
Or now Swindon and Lowestoft, or actually the world.
Yeah, yeah.
So the STC is not just people collaborating on bits of tech that they thought, oh, have you heard? It's actually a community of interest. It's a people ecosystem of business leaders saying, what do we want for this area? I was amazed that people, did you come to the first annual event?
No, so we'd only just become a member shortly after that ourselves as a firm.
One of the highlights there was we had a talk from Heathrow.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Now, I use that as an example of everyone saying, well, what's Heathrow doing here? I mean, you know, is that really an hour's drive time? Not, you know, if you're one of the F1 drivers here, it might be. why would they be, you know? And the reason is, and this is the beauty of it, they're the person who came to speak was saying, look, third runway, likely to happen. Heathrow is like a mini city. It's got, you know, obviously the food and beverage and, you know, the logistics of getting you to your holiday. But it's got churches. It's got, you know, waste disposal systems. It's got aircon. It's got, they were even saying that when you have a flight delayed or you have people that, you know, the concourse has to be cleared and everyone's outside, they have to take a kind of a whiteboard outside and write up all the flights on a, you know, but they want to be able to take that outside in a sort of a movable digital form. And because they've got lots of people to have to feed, you know, waste dispose. Mm-hmm. It's like a, and that made us think, well, hang on. And they were saying, are there technologies that you're fostering that we can use? Which I think is mind blowing when you think of someone like Heathrow coming to the cluster saying, look, you know, I don't know if anyone can help me here.
Yeah, yeah, but we recognise that you might be able to.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And it's not sort of what people think is within the cluster area, but it, that's why it first made me think that this, the cluster isn't a physical boundary. It's a potential. It's a potentiality. It's a capacity to help.
Yeah.
UK PLC.
A wider audience.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
And through the SIGs, if you're fostering, you know, something really clever that people think you need a, you know, you need a PhD to understand. How do we take, you know, at the end, something out of that will be something, not being rude, Chris, but you and I might say, oh, I see what the purpose of that is, and cut it across silos of industries to make it useful to someone right in another silo, let's call it, that might think, actually, you know, you could, if you could 3D print a liver or a kidney, apparently you can, how, you know, the biomedical companies might not realise you can do that. Or perhaps they're telling you can 3D print, I don't know, you know, I'm not even sure what I'm talking about.
No, no, but the opportunity of being able to collaborate and partner with people outside of our business community, yeah, geographically, but also from a sector and sort of speciality is huge. Yeah. And you're right, the Heathrow example, Pim, you know, rightly explained that same story in episode one of the podcast where, you know, businesses from the STC and Silverstone Park are now collaborating with Heathrow, which is just such a win.
That's great that you use that.
From a story point.
Because it's, I mean, people probably wouldn't get too surprised if we said, you know, because you know, you've heard of the thing that the F1 telemetry, in-car telemetry, has to be really good because the driver's getting, you know, information from the pits. Mm. And we know that that's lent itself to how, well, in fact, how hospitals can use that sort of pit net technology. Or in fact, the flat babies, when they come out blue, how the pit lane technology about how to get the baby breathing again, the hospitals and the pit lane have, bless you, have learnt how you get things done in quick sequence. You
know,
getting a wheel off a car
is
the same as getting a flat baby breathing. And so you think, well, I can sort of see that. But the Heathrow thing showed you how relevant the STC is.
And it's just at the beginning, you know, two years plus in, you know, 100 members plus at the moment. And very, 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 very exciting. Andrew, we are 37 minutes into this podcast. We have literally waffled for England. Right, I'm going to...
No, I've waffled for England.
Well, I'm a good host. You know, I get our interviewees talking, which is the main purpose. People don't want to listen to my...
It'll be on the cutting room floor, don't
my dulcet tones. Yeah, yeah. So we'll edit most. No, we'll keep it all in. Before I get on to the last few questions, is there anything that I haven't asked you that you'd like to sort of say or talk about whilst you have... airtime?
Well, only as an advert to people that have been curious about the STC and hadn't really thought about committing. Speak to Pim. It's now got a structure. It's got now more resources in it with help for Pim to keep people alert to the newsletter and to the interest groups. And to not be a stranger. I mean, don't think this is just about technology. It's about a community of people that are trying to do better business.
Sure.
So that's all I'd say.
Yeah, and, so, and for those that are listening, Pim is the CEO. And so what I'll do is I'll leave a number of links in the show notes, including, obviously, a link to Aylesbury Vale District Council, but also to the SDC, so that if you do want to get in contact and sort of discuss potentially sort of collaborating, partnering up, etc., then you've got an avenue to do that.
Just come to the Innovation Centre for a coffee. There's a sort of a, I think they've just launched the space to kind of...
The collaborative workspace downstairs, lots of comfortable sofas, PlayStation, which was my request, which they've agreed to.
We
which
have
is
to bump
good.
You off that to let someone else.
Well, that's it. You know, I've got to get back to my day job, right? Andrew, two last questions. As you sink into your chair. So the first question, which I always ask everybody, and they always sort of cringe at me when I ask it, but it's about embarrassing mistakes. And just to explain again for the listeners that may not have listened to previous episodes, we all make mistakes, and we need to occasionally laugh at them, but certainly learn from them. And so we like to ask our wonderful interviewees, has there been anything in their background, whether it be from university days through to early career, through to current career, that... you know, they'd be prepared to share with our listeners. So, Andrew, is there anything?
Well, there was one. I was a young greenhorn housing officer on a housing estate in the North Bristol.
Okay.
And I had to go around to do the arrears collections.
Oh, dear. Okay.
Which is not a great job.
No.
And I knocked on the door once of a flat in Patchway in Bristol. And I was so impressionable. And there were two ladies in there, not very much older than me, because I was only about 21. And they were watching the most graphic porn I've ever seen.
Oh, dear. OK.
On the telly. Okay. They were just watching it, you know what I mean?
Sure.
And I had to sort of read them a script about the rent arrears that they were due. Whilst they were looking at the television and then looking at me, looking to see whether I would get completely phased.
Okay.
That was one thing.
And they'd done that on purpose, presumably.
They did it on purpose.
Sure, yeah.
I'm not sure I got the money. the other time I was visiting a very strange old... because I had to go and look at houses that people needed to move from to council housing. And this was in Croydon. And there was some quite a lot of, you know, not very nice housing around there. And I once knocked at the door and someone opened it and I showed them my card. And this is segues into the lessons for, you know, a younger me, my work card. And they snatched it and shut the door.
And, okay.
So I'm not sure. I can't remember how I got that back out, because I'd say, look, I'm really, because that was my ID and I thought I'd get sacked because of that. And I managed to get back in, and you had to measure the sort of house. Then you had to a tape measure, which was quite interesting, where you'd have, because the size of their property, their rental property, would determine how many points they got and much housing need they're in.
Yeah, yeah.
So it was quite interesting putting the tape measure under white goods, beds, hitting chamber pots, pulling frozen sausages under from under fridges.
Oh, dear.
And when you're only sort of 21, this is quite hard work. Those sort of embarrassing, they embarrass me, but I'm not sure many people would.
Well, no, I think
it's
they're
not like a pratfall at a conference.
I think they're fantastic stories. And this is, you know, I think we're episode 31. You know, it's the first time we've had the mention of porn. So, yeah, bravo. You know,
I think the world can know that now.
No, I think we're Andrew.
You know, 40 years later, that's okay.
Yeah, yeah, for sure. Very brave. So thank you for sharing that with us. Last question. We know we have some wonderful students listening to the show now. So big shout out to all of those that are listening, certainly if they're from Kingsthorpe College, who will know me. Clearly, you are a master in your field, you know, CEO of, second largest district council in the UK. Lots and lots of experience. But there would have been a time, as you said, greenhorn, back in your sort of early days, even pre-career, where you would have been a little bit green, a little bit wet behind the ears. So sort of knowing what you know now, as a master in your field, if you were to go back to your younger self, what one bit of advice would you give yourself?
I would give myself the advice that it's never too late. Don't commit too early. If you start something and you think, oh, this has to be my career, It's not. You think the world's ended when you're 21 if you haven't chosen, or school tries to say you must do this because you're good at that topic. I demonstrated, I did forestry, and I got a 2-1. You know, I could have become a forester, but I didn't do that anymore. And I switched completely into, because I met someone that was, it could have been in financial services, or it could have been, I don't know, an engineer. And you've got plenty of time, even in your 20s and 30s or older, to have more than one career, to do something, have a good time in it, switch it. I mean, you know, I'm 60 this year. I don't think I'm, you know, retired. You could do another 20 years.
Sure.
I could create businesses, do businesses whilst you're doing another, maybe a course. Don't feel it's all over. Enjoy what you do and do what you enjoy. It might take you a couple of starts to find that. So my advice to myself would be, you know, this isn't it. But looking at it from the lens of the end of the telescope when you're 21, you think that has to be it. Because you think, I need a house, I need to get some money for myself. So I think even now, when we were talking the other day about apprenticeships and my children growing up, it's so good to see so many apprenticeships coming through in the apprenticeship levy. And to see these as legitimate courses of action for people that don't want to go to uni and maybe have that debt. There's nothing. In fact, there's every reason why you should go and learn the ropes, get a bit of money while you're doing it, get a course at UTC or you know, whomever's providing that as an employer, and try things out. Don't be scared, because there's plenty of time, and don't be told that that's it if the first one doesn't work out.
Very sage advice. I think my key takeaway from that is enjoy what you do. Do what you enjoy. Andrew, thank you so much for coming on the show. Looking forward to feedback from our wonderful listeners online and face to face. No, it's good. I think that was a good episode. But thank you for coming on. We'd love to get you on in future seasons to sort of catch up on all things sort of Aylesbury Vale and what's going on, and clearly, hopefully, the natural growth and progression of the STC.
Definitely.
So, Andrew,
goodbye
for
now, then.
Goodbye for now.
Bye.
The Inside Silverstone podcast is produced by the team at Longhurst for the benefit of those with a passion for all things tech, engineering and innovation. For more information, please visit longhurst.co.uk/InsideSilverstone, whilst also remembering to give us a 5 out of 5 star rating on iTunes. Please note that neither Chris Broom or Longhurst work for Silverstone Park, Silverstone Circuit or Silverstone Technology Cluster.